This podcast's only purpose is for informational use. It is not a recommendation to buy or sell any security. Investing in the market is risky, and past performance is not indicative of future results. In this episode, I cover behavioral finance and what it could mean to you.
Congratulations, you don't know me, but you will. You got the beans.
Welcome back to another episode of the 2 Cents 20 Year Old podcast, the podcast where I talk about the things that you should be thinking about when it comes to your money. So I'm sure you've heard about the progress with the new stimulus package that President Biden has been pushing. But if you haven't, don't even sweat it. I checked it out for you. So I'm not sure if you guys knew this, but for the past year, we've been kind of stuck in this pandemic of sorts that has basically torn apart our economy, closing down businesses, creating uncertainty in the markets, and raising unemployment levels to a point that we had not seen since 1948. According to the Congressional Research Service, the specific percentage was around 14.8% of unemployed Americans, which is just over 23 million people losing their jobs and income. This was around the time of April 2020, which was when we saw the first wave of stimulus checks being deposited into the bank accounts of the American people. This first stimulus package was priced at $2.2 trillion, and at the peak of the wave of unemployment, it was a great move handing out these $1,200 checks to people that made under the adjusted gross income or AGI limit of $75,000 annually. But that's where it stopped for 8 months. A $1,200 check to live off of for 8 months for someone who lost their job and had to pay a mortgage and car payments and get groceries, I would just assume that the mortgage payment alone for the month would take that stimulus as if they had never even gotten it deposited in their account. But then in December 2020, then President Trump signed another stimulus package, only this time it had a price tag of around $900 billion. Still, obviously a massive number. It's basically the market cap of some of the biggest companies in the world. But as I said, it was 8 months after the first checks were in people's bank accounts. And, these were basically cut in half for the people who needed them. And now there is this new package from President Biden that the Senate has approved of, leaving it up to the House to vote on. And now this package is valued at $1.9 trillion. So more than double our second package, but less than our first package in April, shy by just a few hundred billion dollars. Now, of this $1.9 trillion, $400 billion is set aside for households to get stimulus checks of around $1,400 per house member, which includes college students and other dependents within the household. A quote from a Wall Street Journal article broke this down really well. The article said, "The $1,400 comes on top of the $600 approved in December, so people will be receiving a total of $2,000 between the two rounds of payments, fulfilling a Democratic promise. A married couple with two children will receive up to $5,600. That is more than $3,400 maximum payment in last year's first round of that household, and the $2,400 maximum from the second round. Now, this is huge because during the last few packages, adult dependents were left out. Knowing that my audience skews closer to the 18 to 25-year-old range, this is great for anyone who is still living with their parents and or still considered a dependent when you or your parents file taxes. Building off of the round of payments for individual Americans, there is also said to be another round of paycheck protection relief for small businesses struggle still even a year later. Overall, I think this is a great thing that we're getting a round of stimulus passed and we have vaccines rolling out and we even have that Johnson & Johnson single dose. I feel like we are starting to collect ourselves and everything will be open soon enough. And, you can really just only hope that that's true. But obviously, we have no idea. We have no idea what the future holds. We are just getting along just like we were a year ago. Hopefully that helped you understand what's going on with the stimulus and what it means for you and your family. But today we are talking about something that I have actually been studying in college and learning more and more every day about, and that's behavioral finance. So one of the classes I take is, funny enough, personal finance. I have to be honest, I signed up for the class and I really thought it was going to be more about the stuff that, we talk about on this podcast. Investment portfolios, how to budget, why you should invest for long term, that type of stuff. Well, in this personal finance class, we go over that type of stuff for sure, but there is also this level of pretty intense calculations and value estimates and which tax bracket does this person fit in and all this crazy stuff. Overall, super interesting and informative, but one of the things that stuck out to me was when we covered behavioral finance. It's hilarious because the videos that my professor assigns us to watch are oftentimes people that I know from TikTok and their YouTube channels of videos talking about certain topics. In this instance, it was Dr. Brad Klontz discussing what behavioral finance was and how to avoid making these certain mistakes that he talked about on this video. Dr. Brad makes awesome content on YouTube and TikTok, so please go check him out. His content is super informative and was really the reason my interest sparked into making this episode about behavioral finance. Maybe I'll get him on a podcast and talk about it a little more in depth. I think that'd be awesome. Investopedia defines behavioral finance as the following. Behavioral finance, a subfield of behavioral economics, proposes that psychological influences and biases affect the financial behaviors of investors and financial practitioners. Moreover, influences and biases can be the source of explanation of all types of market anomalies, and specifically market anomalies in the stock market, such as severe rises or falls in stock price. So basically what this is saying is that behavioral finances mean exactly what you might think that it means, an individual's behavior when it comes to their finances, investments, and money as a whole. I mean, I think we all know that this is valid depending on what type of investor you are, whether it's short-term, long-term, options trader, crypto investor, real estate investor, whatever. There is always that underlying risk of things out of your control. This risk is what causes people to be, you know, maybe less than optimistic when it comes to investments, because who would want to lose the money that they spent time and effort working for? If you're investing, you're ideally investing to make money. Otherwise, if you knew that something was a 99% chance of failure, I have a feeling most, if not all of us, would keep our money in a savings account. But without risk, you stay in the same place. And that's basically why we try to minimize the risk as much as possible by investing in things that have proven to be less risky, yet fairly successful over long periods of time. Let's go back to Dr. Brad Klontz's video on behavioral finance. Dr. Brad starts out his breakdown of the mistakes that people are going to make in their investing career with a warning. He basically said that his video was going to be full of harsh truths about mistakes that we are all going to make. But in order for us to learn about these mistakes, it's better for us to be called out by someone like Dr. Brad rather than the market calling us out and taking our money. The first mistake that Dr. Brad points out is what's called overconfidence bias. CorporateFinanceInstitute.com defines overconfidence bias as, quote, a tendency to hold a false and misleading assessment of our skills, intellect, or talent. In short, it's an egotistical belief that we're better than we actually are. It can be a dangerous bias and very prolific in behavioral finance. It also includes the subsequent effects on the markets. So yeah, this was a tough one to start out with. This one was a little bit hurtful, but truth hurts. That's just how it is. Basically, what this is saying is that none of us are the next Warren Buffett, and chances are that the guy who's giving you random stock picks in the comment section of a TikTok video isn't either. If you consider yourself a seasoned investor who has quite a bit of knowledge and has an idea of what they're going to invest in and why, I'm sure you would consider yourself, you know, pretty good at what you do. Having this confidence is key to investing smartly and dutifully so that our future selves will thank us. However, being overconfident is absolutely destructive to our portfolios and possibly even our mental health when it comes to market fluctuations. Being so firmly and stubbornly confident in your abilities as an investor means that you aren't willing to adapt to the market or take advice from really anyone. This may lead you to take more risk than you might usually take. This might lead you to betting your whole account on something that you thought was a sure thing. And you guys know on this podcast, we love diversifying. So, you know, we don't put all of our chips in the pot. Always keeping it in the back of your mind that you really have no idea how the market will ever react will hopefully keep you from biting off more than you can chew. The second mistake that Dr. Brad points out is having a narrow frame of reference. I'm going to guess that most of us were around the age of, maybe 7 to 10 years old around the time of the 2008 financial crisis, and maybe we were even younger. We don't remember the devastation that this country saw and all of the liquidity that was wiped out because of it. However, what we do remember is the Dow Jones Industrial Average hitting 30,000. To put it into perspective, during 2009, the Dow was at around 7,000 points. So basically that is a 22,000 point margin from then to now, with relatively little bearish behavior in the market. This is the narrow frame of reference that Dr. Brad is talking about. We've only just begun investing after, you know, over a decade of exponential growth in the market. We have only seen the upside of tech, crypto, whatever else. There really has been little downside. Even during the global depression that we are still in, the market has basically ignored it, hitting record highs day after day. The period that we began investing in was a period of massive growth. Picking winners wasn't hard. And with easy access to the internet and social media, I honestly think that this really isn't going to stop anytime soon. We have 100 legs up on generations of investors before us simply from the internet and ease of access with investing, you know, with certain apps like Robinhood, M1 Finance, whatever. But anyway, the narrow frame of reference only applies slightly if you are a long-term investor. Seeing your positions as assets that you will be holding for a long time widens your frame of reference by default. Understanding that you have no idea what will happen within the next 25 years is key to not making hasty investing decisions. The third and final mistake that Dr. Brad points out is what's called anchoring bias. Now, this one is big in my opinion. Anchoring bias is being so connected and determined to stick with a stock or asset that you bought, they basically ride it down to the bottom, so sure that you'll sell it just as long as maybe you break even. You bought it at a certain price, it is now below that certain price, and has remained there for quite some time, but you know, you're saying to yourself, it just needs to break this price and then I'm out. When in reality, you could be sitting in a boat that has a tiny hole at the bottom, just sinking day after day, hour after hour, whatever. Obviously, anchoring bias can be applied to anything in life, but today we'll be applying it to investing. And I think that that is a big one because, you know, like I said, this could be applied to anything in life, but with anchoring bias in investing, it comes down to that point where it is your own money. You were so hopeful that this would take off and do well and you'd double, quadruple your money, whatever. And when the opposite happens and you lose double, quadruple your money, obviously, like, I mean, and then you don't want to sell because you don't want to actually lose that money. You don't want to realize those losses. It just comes to that anchoring bias really takes hold of you and you really have no control over what's happening with your positions. Your psyche's messed up, your confidence is messed up. So anchoring bias is a huge one in my opinion. All right, guys, that was a little bit about behavioral finance and how it applies to us and our investing. Because I know I am definitely at fault for some of these mistakes, but in the Two Cents community, we listen to people who know more and then continue to learn every day. Like I said, I think it would be great to actually get Dr. Brad Klontz on the pod, and if you guys would like to see this, let me know on TikTok and Twitter at Two Cents 20 Year Old. I will absolutely try to make that happen. Maybe we can talk more about behavioral finance. Check Dr. Brad Klontz out on TikTok and YouTube. For sure, his videos are so great. He has a book out too. The guy has just done it all. He is absolutely great to learn from. For next week's episode, I have a special guest coming on. She is another incredible TikTok content creator. So that will be super exciting. Be sure to tune in next week for that. I'm not sure what we're going to talk about yet. Her and I still have to discuss it. I have a couple of ideas, but obviously it's going to relate to investing, money, whatever else. If you are on Apple Podcasts, please give this a review and a rating. It would mean so much to me, truly. Thank you guys for listening, and I will see you next week. Anything like asking her out, she might say no. Anytime she talks to me, I feel I gotta go. Nervously and purposely, I never really know just exactly what to say. She got me geeking on the low. Lately, I've been looking at myself in third person. Now I finally see it's hard to see that I've been hurting.